Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Ivy Podcast. If you are wondering about how to best prepare for the remote work revolution that's happening in front of us, whether you are a professional or an executive, then this episode is for you. We're gonna be diving deeper into remote work. What are some of the skill sets that you can develop? How do you build culture? And many other things related to remote work. And today I have the pleasure of having Nuracil Sarić, who is the co-founder and CEO of Remote Team. Nuracil, thank you so much for being on the show.
It's an honor to be in the show. Thanks a lot for inviting, guys.
Absolutely, no, thanks so much for taking the time. And to get us started, let's start with diving deeper, a little bit deeper into your background. You know, I understand that you are someone that is a remote work expert and obsessed with understanding the customer. Where does that come about and how has that played out in your past experiences?
Sure. I guess like just say background wise, I'm originally from Kazakhstan. I've lived most of my life in UK. I've studied there, I worked there. I've started a bunch of startups there. I guess the whole idea how I went into remote, that was like 5 years ago. So we've been in the remote space for 5+ years before it became a trend. So essentially me and my co-founder, he's from Ukraine. So we essentially were starting startups in the UK. And then for us, because we mostly bootstrapped most of our startups, was a cost. So that was one of the things why we started being remote. First, we kind of hated the idea of having an office, going into office. We're either like in someone's house or flat or just like remote. So we love that idea of flexibility that you can literally work from anywhere. What's the reason of actually being in the office? And then because obviously we were from a different countries, we're kind of looking to employ people from our own countries or different other countries. And then that's where we first faced the kind of challenges of employing people remotely. Essentially in terms of most of our startups, most of them failed, but we had one kind of successful one that we had exit with. So it was Felix Math. It's an AI math tutor app. You take a picture of any math equation, it gives you step-by-step solution within seconds. We had 100,000 monthly active users. We've been upsourced app of the week, top 10 free education apps in the UK. So at the end we sold off tech part of it. And we had a nice exit with that. And then essentially with that, knowing that we were all remote first companies, we always faced the challenges of how to hire people globally in a compliant and the right way. And then we, in a way, we were kind of our own customer, to be honest. We felt all the pains ourselves. We looked for a solution. We used some legacy solutions. And then what we hated about them was that they were super slow. They were non-tech savvy. They have lots of hidden fees. And then those are the things we thought like, okay, in the era of gusto and Zenefits, like how can global payroll be so painful? Why is there so many hidden fees in there? So that was like one of the motivations for us to tackle this industry and then build something that we ourselves would love to use. And I mostly held positions of product. I love building products, understanding the customer pains. Even into product, I kind of got accidentally because I studied accounting and finance. that was a kind of a transition that I did not expect, but I always loved tech. And then I was always fascinated by that. I self-taught myself how to code, and then that's how I went into product management. And then later, after starting a bunch of our own startups, I thought maybe it's time for us to join another startup. So I joined a startup in London called Job Today. Mm-hmm. So for them, I essentially launched a new division. I was the first product tech person. I built the first MVP without coders or developed with designers. So I love no-code startup as well. And then essentially, then I assembled a team that with whom we've built a payroll in the UK. So that was our kind of first experience of understanding how to be in a HR tech plus building a payroll. And then later knowing, having that experience and understanding the pains of the customer ourselves, we decided, okay, let's give it a try and build a global payroll. So that was kind of our background, how we went into this. There was a mixture of our skill set plus the experience, the pain points we faced ourselves.
Thank you so much for that, Russell. And you know, there's so many directions that we can take from here. But there is, before we dive into failures, because I want to talk about that, because you mentioned that you fail a lot. So I'm definitely curious about that. But before doing that, let's talk a little bit about remote team. What is the specific pain point that you're trying to solve? Like, you know, who is the customer? Let's dive into that.
Sure. So a remote team is a global payroll and HR compliance solution. In simple words, let's say you have a company that is based in US. Mm-hmm. You want to hire someone from UK, China, Russia, India, any country in the world. You have two ways to do it. Number one, you can go and set up entities in those countries, which is quite costly. It costs about 20 to 80K upfront. Mm-hmm. And then it's time consuming. It takes 2 to 6 months to set up an entity in a different country, essentially, a subsidiary in their case. Number two, they can hire people as independent contractors or freelancers. So that is, I would say, the most common way how companies do that. Mm-hmm. But when do hire people as a contractor or freelancer, there are a few misclassification risks that they don't know mm-hmm. about. Most of the customers that we'd speak to, they don't really know because they just becoming a remote company. Mm-hmm. Essentially, if someone works for you full time and the person has a manager, that's all the kind of red flags that says this person is classified as a contractor, but rather is a full time employee. And essentially, you're not paying the right taxes. They're not paying the right taxes. And if one of them, if the government finds out or the employee somehow leaks in, and then you'll have to pay penalties, you'll have to pay all the taxes from day one. So in some severe cases, there might be some prison time. But I mean, it's a super interesting part where a lot of people don't really know how it works and then how it should be hired and then what kind of documents you need to kind of fill in and so on. So I guess for those reasons we exist. So what we did, we set up our own entities or through partners, we set up entities in different countries in the world. And then we hire people on behalf of our customers. So that's called an employer record solution. Essentially, instead of them setting up an entity themselves or hiring person as a contractor, they come to us and then with one click, we hire the person into our entity. And then essentially they will be working as they hired themselves. So we kind of like to call ourselves an extended HR partner. So we like to be the partner that actually helps them rather kind of just thinks them as a customer or they're paying them to do stuff. So yeah, so when the customers come to us, they come with a problem of saying, hey, how do I hire a person in this country or in that country? And then we tell them what is the best way to do it.
Thank you so much for that, Russell. And I totally agree with you that it's much needed. And I was involved in a startup where we didn't think about this when we started doing more remote work. We didn't think about if we were going to be compliant in other countries as we would hire more and more staff. So I can definitely see the need there to make sure that startups are compliant, right? Because every country has their own rules and regulations around the workforce in general. So with this said, what are some other things that companies need to take under consideration when they're shifting towards remote work, right? We already touched on what remote team does and helps companies do, but what are some of the other things that companies need to do or should do to ensure that they have an efficient remote workforce?
Got it. Yeah, I mean, that is a big topic right now. So there are a lot of companies that trying to coach people to be the right remote first company. There are lots of directions you take. But I guess like for me myself, there are three main things that I look at in our own company. Number one is writing everything down. So I think when you're a remote company, you don't have a privilege to go in the office and come to someone and say, hey, can you explain me that or this? So writing everything down so someone, anyone you onboard or someone in your company can have the access to that knowledge you have or any specific information they're looking. So it's like a directory within your company that you can access anytime. So that is super important, I would say. Writing everything down for every single employee you have, they should write down on their own end, you should write down on your own end, and then you'll have a library of knowledge in your company that could be passed to anyone you onboard, and they can go in and read about different stuff. So I think that helped us in our previous companies, and then now in our remote team. Essentially for us was we didn't write anything, and then you have to sync up with everyone and then they explain them how it works. I think that's just like repetitive process. So if you write it once, yes, it might not be that. I mean, like not everyone is a good writer, or not, you don't feel like writing about it, but if you do it once, and then it kind of helps you in the future rather than us telling it to someone over and over again. And then number two for me would be to adapt async meetings or overall async, because essentially meeting with someone on a calls all the time is tough because of the time zones. And then people need to kind of either wake up at 1 a.m. or like 5 a.m. or go to sleep, and then, or maybe their work time starts late. So essentially for those reasons, I feel that async meetings are the best. And then to be honest, that kind of forces your company to, the people forces your people to be kind of more effective, because they're not waiting for the meetings, they're not waiting for anything else. They just do it through the chat, or like make sure that everything is async. It's a good way to boost your efficiency in the company, I would say. And then final part, I would say culture. So there is a good saying that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And then I think it's absolutely true. In our case, like culture is a big thing. So we try to adopt the culture from delivering happiness. Tony made a good one, a good book. And then I think like when I read it first, I fell in love with the whole ideology that he brought to the world. And then that's how I see the culture. And then I guess like there are different ways we can talk about the culture, how to develop it. And we could go into it if you like. If not, then we can talk about some other stuff.
Yeah, no, that was going to be my follow-up to this, because culture in remote teams is big, right? And obviously there are some challenges to building a remote culture, right? Because you don't have the in-person water cooler conversations. So let's dive into it. Like what are some of the key strategies or tactics that you have implemented to build that culture in a remote team, right? Or let's start with how would you define culture?
That's a good question. So culture, I guess, like it's a cornerstone ideology that your team has? Like, in my case, I believe like we set up some ideology like kindness, customer obsession, and then cost optimization, one of the like three cornerstones to be, and then everyone is kind of going into that direction. But I, so that's what would I say is our cultural benefits and then definition in our company.
I think that's great, right? It's all about being aligned, right, with the values that you want to represent as a company, as a professional. So, and what are some of the, I guess, challenges that you have experienced when trying to build culture, right? Like, how do you make sure that everybody is aligned with the culture of a remote company?
That's definitely tough. I think with the remote company, that's definitely tough because you don't have that personal touch. You don't have that kind of meetings. So I think with us, what we try to do, we try to build up some activities. And then I felt that the activities might actually be one of the things that boost kind of the morale of the team and then get them to know each other more and then eventually help the culture. So I think the culture should be built via activities, yearly meetups, some benefits. So those are the things that could kind of help to grow it. I know like I tend to like one particular activity where you are randomly assigned one-on-one with someone on a weekly basis. Like it just goes random people. So yeah, so we love that because you don't have to specifically go and talk to someone, but rather it's just randomly you get a one-on-one with someone and you kind of forced to talk to the person, but at the end it turns out to be great because you get to learn about them more, about their challenges, and then that's how everyone helps each other.
I really love that you mentioned that because, you know, one of the things with remote work is the loneliness, right? People have been reporting like more and more feelings of loneliness. And I think one of the ways to mitigate that is by having this type of activities where you get to have a call with your coworker, with your teammate, and not necessarily talk about work, but talk about life too. Like, you know, what do you like? What do you like to do on your free time, right? Like, what do you like to eat? You know, things that seem trivial, but that build relationship and build trust. So I really like that you mentioned that because loneliness is an epidemic, right? And now that things are shifting more remote, I feel like we have to make more conscious decision of actively trying to connect with our teammates, right? I think that's a big thing.
Absolutely. The loneliness is a big one right now. And I think mental breakdowns are happening because of that. And then overall, I think it's really tough to be at home if you're locked down. I guess like the ideal world of remote work is that you don't have any restrictions of where to go. You can work from the, I don't know, from the park, from the beach, from wherever. But especially this time in 2020, it was because everyone was locked in into their homes, into maybe small apartments. It's just like, it's really tough. You feel like you're in a prison.
It does. Luckily, I do have a window here, so with a great view. So that helps me out a little bit. Awesome. I want to shift gears here and ask you about, because I know you have been doing remote work even before remote work was cool, even before this shift, right? And last year with COVID, a lot of people got taken by surprise, right? With everything going remotely, and people are struggling with that adjustment, and companies too, right? Like, what would your advice be to someone that, you know, is not used to remote work and is trying to adapt to this new, I guess, new normal, right? In terms of skill sets or things that they could do to be a better remote teammate?
Yeah, I think that is a very great question because I myself struggled to be a good remote teammate in the beginning, and I'm probably still learning a lot of things. But overall, I feel like there's lots of directions we can obviously take, but I like to highlight two most important things that helped me.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is writing skills. So you gotta boost your writing skills, because when you async or when most of the stuff is in writing, when you write something, it could mean different things and then people can perceive it differently. So if you learn to write concisely, precisely, and that would help a lot. So a writing skills, I would say, for me personally, it helped a lot. So obviously not, I wasn't a good writer. I was writing some stuff that people perceived in a different way. They did something different. I was like, shit, I meant something else. So yeah, so I think that that is very important as a skill. And number two, I feel it's another second big one that I'm still struggling to cope well, is a self-management. Meaning time management, meaning managing your work-life balance, all of it together. So that it is a big topic and a skill, because if you're not managing it well, there could be burnouts, loss of motivation, your productivity goes down, and then all the things that depend on that. So I think like really, really kind of thinking about the calls. So like, for example, if you take different meetings, different calls, it's tough to find a time for deep work. So sometimes like you have so much distractions and you feel that your day is not done, like because you haven't done anything, you just been in the calls. So I definitely recommend people to think about self-management, the way it kind of helps their own lifestyle. So for me, for example, I block out days and then kind of times in each day that I don't take any calls. I just work and I don't look at the emails. I'm just unavailable because I'm doing some work that it needs 100% concentration. And then managing yourself to do all of that, plus also thinking about the work-life balance, making sure that, you know, sometimes it's only 3 p.m. and you feel like not working for a couple of hours, don't. I know it feels kind of wrong, but because people are used to office hours, like 9 to 5, 9 to 6, they're like, it's 3 p.m., I got to go back to work. But sometimes, you know, I feel like 3 p.m., I don't feel like working for the next 3 hours. I go and take a break. It's fine. You should do it, like, definitely. Because
I agree.
Honestly, like, one of the things I felt when I was in the office plus working remotely is that when you work remotely, the work never ends. And then you end up doing more work. So it's fine. So if you feel that those 3 hours at 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. feels weird, yes, it does, but it's fine. Take a break and do some other stuff. So definitely that one was a kind of boost for myself. So honestly, like, there was days like I wake up late, but I still do stuff. So I think you should just try and find your balance.
I really love that you mentioned this, because first, let's start with writing, which is just being a good communicator, right? And it sounds like a basic skill, but I'm surprised how many people miscommunicate in writing or either, you know, in a speaking format. And I was laughing internally because I was watching a YouTube video by Jordan Peterson, where he gets asked this question about skill sets. And he basically told the students, learn to read, learn to write, learn to speak. But the reason he was saying that, it was because if you are able to communicate your ideas in a way that are clear, concise, and influence the people receiving your message, then you're going to be someone that most likely are going to succeed, right? And it sounds so basic, but it's so true. And the second part that they mentioned on Udemy had this report of 2021 trends, and the number one was, I think it was called self-mastery. And the fact that you mentioned that just makes me happy, because it is true, right? Burnout, not knowing your boundaries, what you need in order to be productive. I saw something, I think Wes Kao, she was the person responsible for pioneering the alt MBA with Seth Godin. And she tweeted yesterday of how she was shocked that 96% of people spend all of their days in meetings and they start actual work after five.
Exactly.
I think that's something that we need to be aware of, right? Like, is this meeting necessary? Right? Is this something that could be done in an email or any other way? Right? When with that said, just to shift gears here a little bit, what are some of the tools or apps that you use on a day-to-day basis to manage remote work?
I guess like we ourselves still exploring different apps, different tools. So I mean, we use Slack, obviously. We use Notion. I think Notion is the big thing. So it's kind of, we use it for all the knowledge sharing. So most of our data, most of our company information is in Notion. So the directory I talked about. So we use Jira, Aha. And then I guess in terms of self kind of tracking, you can use different tracking apps to track your time where you need deep work. You could use some, I personally use different kind of apps to listen to some calming music so I can go into my deep work. So those are the things. But the most important tool that you should use, it's a global payroll and compliance.
Of course. Make sure you're compliant in your business.
Yeah, make sure that is the number one priority when you go remote. Yeah, so I guess like those are the main things we use. But again, nowadays there are like so many tools that are popping up every day in terms of remote. I think there's like so many of them. Like you just should find the balance. I think for me, I'm not a kind of a person where I want to have like different tools for their different stuff. I like to minimize different extra stuff, so I like to have as minimum as possible the tools, so not everyone jumps in different places, because it's just gonna be a mess. So what we have, even in our kind of organization, we try to limit the tools that people can use, because like imagine tomorrow comes someone else, he's like, oh, I know this tool is best, so he adopts that. Another one comes and he knows the other tool, so it just becomes a Frankenstein and you'll have to use different tools. So we try to minimize the tools, and even though like let's say Notion doesn't have most of a kind of tracking system for tasks, for issues, and so on and so forth, we try to even like use one single platform. So even though that there will be less of functionality rather than pure software for a particular purpose, we try to just stick to one and then see how it goes.
I like that. I think Notion is a big one, and one that I'm still getting my feet wet, because you can do so many things with Notion. And I agree with you, right? There's tools for everything. Like there's so many tools out there, and I think you can easily get overwhelmed. So I'm a big believer in limiting the number of options, right, that you have, especially to get your work done. All right, so let's shift gears here because I promised at the beginning that we're going to dive into failures, and I want to make sure we do that. How have your failures set you up for success, right? And what is your favorite failure out of all the failures that you had?
I guess my favorite failure is not being able to get into investment banking or banking overall. So as I said, like, I studied accounting and finance. I wanted to go into banking, but things didn't work out. And kind of there were two main reasons. My passion and then my interest was still in tech, but I felt back in the days, I felt that investment banking is the right place to be. So as a young person that wants to, I don't know, excel in his career, earn lots of money, and then so on and so forth, I felt that that could be the right direction. But then things didn't work out. I felt like maybe I felt bad at first that I couldn't get into investment banking. But then I felt that that failure set me up to where I am at the moment, because it just shifted, it just closed my path to that. So I didn't go into the banking industry overall. So I just shifted to tech. And then that was, like, I would say, one of the ways for me to be where I am.
Yeah, no, I think sometimes the things that do not work for us end up being the best thing that never happened to us, right? Because they are like a redirection into what you should be doing next, right?
Exactly.
But how do you determine that? Because there's a balance, right? Because I'm a believer in, like, going after what you want, and if it doesn't work out, then try again or try a different strategy.
Never give up yet.
And never give up, right? But there's another aspect of that is recognizing this is not something I want to do. So what made you decide that, of not being insistent of, no, this is, you know, I studied this and this is what I need to make happen. What was that process for you internally?
That is a very good question, because overall, I feel that even in startups, like when you start different startups, you say to yourself, you got to go after it. But sometimes... Sometimes it's like, I think, like, most of the people who start startups, they have that problem with delusion or illusion. They feel this is the right way to go, but it is a really, I don't know, like, probably I don't know myself if there is a way to actually determine if this is the right or not the right way. But for me, I just put some criteria. Is it gonna make it work, or is it gonna succeed? So what are the kind of the right checks for me? So I kind of like have checklist of, if this is the right thing, should I persevere or should I stop on that? And then what are the different ways I can take? And then in particular about the finance, I felt for me the decision process was in a way that I felt that this is potentially the right way to go. But I don't feel that I might be kind of the right person for it. And I didn't have the passion to say that I want to learn more of it every day. I rather had a passion to think about tech, different startups, building the websites, learning a bit more about code. So I had that. But I guess, like, overall, you just gotta think about your gut feelings plus the passions. Like, is it something that you will do regardless if it's gonna make you money, or regardless if you're gonna be happy about it?
I think that's the key there, right? If it's gonna make you happy. Because if you're not happy, then it's not worth it, right? And I think it takes a lot of courage and a lot of internal work to recognize when something that you tried, that you put money and time and effort into it, it's not gonna work out or didn't work out, right? especially for anybody in the audience that is just getting started in their career, if you're listening to this, I think it's important to go out there, try things, experiment, and then learn from that, right? If it's something that resonates with you, keep trying. If it doesn't, then listen to that gut intuition, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Because we're not taught to do that, right? In school or in society, we're not taught to
exactly
to listen to our gut. It's just like, what's your next achievement? You know, what's the next thing that you're going to work on? And I think, yeah, going back to what you said, happiness is the goal, right? That we're trying to achieve. Awesome, Narcel.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think you made a good point. It's very important to understand if this is the right path or not, and then definitely being happy, making sure that this is something that you can do. But at the same time, I think for me personally, even I really think that sometimes that when the things happen, even in the wrong way, I just have a trust that this is probably the right way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So somewhere where things are working out for you.
Exactly.
Awesome, Nora. So last question here before we wrap this up. Mm-hmm. I always like to ask, I guess, you know, what are some of the content that you are consuming, you know, whether it's book, mm-hmm. courses, podcasts, what are some of the things that keep you learning these days?
Go on. Is that the end of the
question? It could be a course, a book, or a podcast, anything that you're reading, listening, or watching.
So mostly now I read stuff that helped me boost the one skill or the other. So right now I'm boosting my sales skills reading a book called Sales Triangle. And then overall, I think when you are a startup founder, it usually happens that you get into a problem and you're like, okay, I don't have experience in that, so why don't I go and learn a bit more about that?
Yeah.
So my favorite way of learning is rather books. Mm-hmm. I would say that podcasts, I listen to them, but not that often. I rather go and read books, and then that's I think my way of learning. Courses, I don't felt that it was efficient for me, because I guess like what I do with the books, I skim through, I try to find the information that I'm looking for, and I get the whole idea. But the courses is too long, takes too much of your effort. Podcasts also, you sometimes don't know who to listen. Where you know, do you know any answers there? So with the books is more or less clear, like there are books that kind of help you do X or Y.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go and learn the fundamentals and you apply in your own way. Having that fundamental, because as you said, like these things are never taught either in school or university. And then so you gotta go and learn it somewhere. But the other also interesting fact that I think having the right mentors, so for me also helps. Mm-hmm. So sometimes like I just go and ask them rather than going and looking for a book that can help me with that.
That's awesome. And a couple things here. I'm a little sad that you didn't mention the Ivy podcast to listen to. just kidding. I think sales, right? Learning sales, doesn't matter what you do or who you are. I think learning sales, it's extremely important. So I'm happy that you mentioned that. And the second thing I wanted to do before, I know we have to wrap it up, but I don't want to leave because you mentioned something important, asking mentors. What would you recommend, or how would you approach asking a mentor? Because I know there's a right way and a wrong way to ask. What would you recommend to someone reaching out to a mentor? How would you go about it?
Reaching out, meaning they looking for a mentor, or meaning they have a mentor and they asking the question?
Looking for a mentor, making the ask, How would you go about that?
I guess like looking for a mentor is a tough one. Not everyone would mentor you, but I guess being brave here. So sometimes, you know, sometimes when people don't ask, they don't get. So we just go and ask. Like, you never know. You're either gonna get yes or no, but that's fine.
If
they said no, go and look for someone else. So yeah, so most of my life, I've just like randomly asked the person. They're like, okay, why not? Let's give it a shot. Let's give it a try, you know? But in the right way of asking is obviously, I mean, like there are stuff that you can find out yourself. So definitely go and ask like very... the kind of thing that you can Google.
Exactly, right? Like, if you can Google it, don't ask me.
Exactly, like, why are you having such a lazy ass not Googling it?
I love it.
I guess, like, I mean, those are the simple principles, but overall, I mean, when you have a mentor, I guess, like, it's more of a conversation style. It's not like you only go to them when you have a problem, but you keep in touch, you just talk, and then here and there it just like pops up different questions and you guys just talk about it, but it's not like you only call your mentor when you have a problem. So it's more of a general catch up and learning about life, learning about their life and your life, and that's pretty much it.
I love it. I love to mention, you know, just ask, make the ask. You can get you can either get a yes or a no, right? Because a lot of times we suffer in our mind before we even doing the action, right? So and I like that you mentioned, it's a relationship, right? Like you build a relationship. It's not just transactional, right? And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes people make is making it a transactional relationship where they only reach out when they need help. Build those relationships because, you know, that's what this is all about. Nurasil, thank you so much again for coming on the show, sharing with us a little bit about your background, your insights into remote work, and how we can, you know, as professionals and executives, better prepare to embrace this revolution that it's already here, right? I don't want to say it's coming because it's already here. And I would love to follow up, you know, do another episode down the road, see where things are at. But for now, this is it. We're going to wrap it up. So thanks so much. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Caesar. It was a pleasure talking to you. It was really good fun. So hey, thanks so much. And then I guess like from now on, I'm going to listen to more podcasts.
Ivy podcast.
Ivy podcast, exactly.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.